The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SMASH. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code SMASH, only on DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia. Visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 and over, age varies by jurisdiction. Void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Episode of the podcast to be named later. I'm Chris Willis, and I'm again joined by my good friend Stephen Talbert. Stephen, the Braves pulled out a 7-2 win over the Washington Nationals today on opening day, but the injury to Max Fried put a damper on the evening. What was your thoughts on the Fried injury? I guess that's the best place to start was with Max Fried. We'll talk about the game here shortly, but obviously not what you want to see coming out of opening day, especially when you've already got two rookies penciled into the rotation.
Yeah, it was a it was a weird feeling today, right? Because it was opening day, which is should be a national holiday, in my opinion. It's one of the best days of the year. And, you know, the Braves hadn't played well on opening day in a few years. You know, it's not really a day they typically do well. And they're playing a day game, which is another thing they don't typically do very well. And so, you know, they're obviously playing one of the worst teams in the league. So you would hope that they would come out and play well. And, you know, they won the game. We'll get into how well they played, you know, a little bit later in the show, but they won the game. But like you said, they lost Max in the process. And listening to Max post game, it didn't sound like it was something he was terribly concerned about. You know, I don't know if that's wishful thinking or if that's just him being honest about it. But the overwhelming consensus after the game was that he's going on the IL, and you know, for pitchers, that's 15 days that they have to be down. So that's, you know, that's three starts. So, you know, that sucks. That really does suck. The Braves don't have a ton of depth right now. They had a lot of depth to start spring training. Obviously, they had Allard, and they had Soroka and Anderson and Elder. But, you know, one by one, kind of all these guys, you know, either hurt or ineffective. And it's obviously with Kyle Wright still hurt, it hurts the depth. So it's a big blow. You know, it's not a death blow. I did see I think there were a few people going a little, you know, a little much. It's so early in the season that, you know, they can weather this. They have one of the best teams in the league, and something you and I talked about all offseason was they're not overly dependent on one player to win. I mean, they can win ugly. So, you know, it's not like doomsday or anything. I you know, if it was an arm injury, a shoulder, if an elbow, I might feel differently, but you know, I think he's got a slight pull in his hammy, and those can be tricky, but I don't think it's anything that we have to, you know, freak out about just yet.
Yeah. Brian Snicker said after the game that Fried would definitely miss his next turn. And then, you know, he was probably going to the injured list. Fried said nobody had talked to him about the injured list yet, but obviously, you know, it just happened. They'll get treatment on it, and then, you know, they don't have to make a decision until Fried's spot comes back up next week. And right now he's scheduled to pitch the last game in that Cardinals series, I believe, on Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken. So they can wait till then, and if he's not good to go, they can put him on the IL and backdate it till tomorrow, I think, actually. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, you know, if it's not serious. Maybe they fill that spot and they can escape having to put him on the IL. But obviously, if there's any doubt whatsoever, you know, you put him on there, you shut him down for 15 days. you know, it's probably short enough amount of time that, you know, he doesn't need a rehab start or anything like that. He could come off the IL and be ready to pitch. So, you know, it's not ideal, but I think Snicker said this today anyway as well. You know, if it's got to happen, you'd rather it be early in the season than you know, down the stretch or anything. You know, the interesting thing to me was kind of what they might do to fill that last spot in the Cardinals. Charlie Morton's scheduled to pitch the opener in St. Louis. Then the next game is when Dylan Dodd's expected to come up. I'm guessing Michael Tonkin gets DFA'd there and they add Dylan Dodd, because right now they only have four starters on the opening day roster. So, you know, where do you turn from there? You know, I mean, to me, the two leading candidates have got to be Ian Anderson and Bryce Elder. You know, obviously they were optioned a good long time ago. You know, Gwinnett has not released their roster yet. I'm guessing that's coming tomorrow because their first game is tomorrow. It's opening day for them. So obviously we don't know who's going to pitch tomorrow. If whoever does pitch tomorrow would be on turn for Wednesday. But Gwinnett's probably going to have enough starters that, you know, if the Braves think they're going to need somebody, maybe they don't even pitch tomorrow. Maybe they just, you know, bring them on. But, you know, what do you think? How would you go? I mean, I even listed a bullpen game here, but I think given the lack of off days, I'm not even sure that's an option. You know, to me, it seems like Anderson or Elder is probably going to come up and have to make a start.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe you know how it works. Like, when you get optioned in the minor, like when you get optioned for spring training, can Anderson and Elder come up? I guess because they would be replacing Max on the IL.
Yeah, and I'm not exactly. I'd have to look and see when they were actually optioned. I think the rule is you know, 15 days, and I think that still applies to the spring. But I think they're probably outside that anyway. But if Freed goes on the IL, you know, they could bring somebody back at any point. So, but okay. I think they're clear of the 15 day. I don't have it in front of me. I should have looked at that before we started, but you know, I remember, you know, I even speculated when they got sent down that maybe they weren't out of this fifth starter thing, you know, that one of them could come up and make that start. And I believe they were outside that window.
I mean, if both those guys are options to you, available to you, then yeah, whoever pitches tomorrow for Gwinnett is the most obvious candidate, you know, whether that's Anderson or Elder. You know, you wouldn't feel great about it, but, you know, both those guys have had success at the majors before, and, you know, it's one start or maybe two starts depending on how long Max is out. So, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it's not overly terrible. I mean, the Braves spent 2 months last year not having a fifth starter and still won 101 games. So, you know, I do think people need to keep it in perspective about how serious this is. It's, you know, if Max is out for a long time, then it's obviously a different story. But, you know, if this is two or three starts, then it's really not something the Braves can't overcome. So yeah, Elder would probably be my first guess, depending on how they line up Gwinnett's rotation. A bullpen game is interesting. I don't know, you know, they would probably want to call another bullpen piece up, a multi-inning guy to try to cover that. The problem is, and you might have said this, you know, they play 12 straight games after tomorrow, or after tomorrow's off day, they play 12 straight games. And running a bullpen game, you know, right at the beginning of a long stretch of games without an off day is very, very risky. Because, you know, if you do that and then the next game, one of your starters gets knocked out in the third inning, you know, you can get hung out to dry really quickly with your bullpen. And, you know, the Braves bullpen had to cover six innings today because, you know, Max went out in the third inning. So, you just gotta be careful. I don't know how much they're gonna want to expose the bullpen that much this early. So I would guess Elder, or Anderson, whoever starts tomorrow for Gwinnett. I don't know that there's a tremendous difference between the two of them at this point. You know, even from the organizational standpoint, I don't know if they view them that differently. So I would say whoever pitches tomorrow for Gwinnett probably has the inside track right now.
Yeah, and they could also opt to have one of those guys throw on the side tomorrow and not make that start in Gwinnett. Just, you know, probably to avoid anything freak happening if they wanted to go that route. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see when those rosters come out, and we're expecting those tomorrow, and they'll all be on the site once we have them. But, you know, I think Elder makes sense. You know, it's just tough because it's a Cardinals, and it's a, you know, that's a, on the road in a, with a good, very good lineup. you know, so it's going to be tough. And man, it's just a tough break for Freed. You hate to see it because he pitched so well during the spring, was pitching well today. The only run he gave up was really the result of a lost fly ball in the sun, you know, so it's disappointing, but like, I mean, this is just part of it. It's part of the game. It's why, you know, we always talk about how important pitching depth is. It's why I always scoff, you know, when people suggest, trading an Elder or an Ian Anderson or somebody like that, because I mean, I was looking at this earlier this week. Braves had 12 different guys make starts last year. Now, granted, two of them, I think one of them was Chesney Chavez, one of them was Jackson Stevens in bullpen games. But still, that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of guys making starts. And, you know, I would say it will probably be, you know, similar situation this year, you know, before all is said and done.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, Max started today. You're going to have Strider. You're going to have Morton. You're going to have Schuster, you're gonna have Dodd, and then you're probably gonna have Ian Anderson or Bryce Elder, and then you're gonna have Kyle Wright. So yeah, I mean, we're not even, I mean, you know, 2 weeks into the season, we're already gonna have seven guys make starts. So I mean, we've said I don't know how many times we said that in the offseason, but you know, no one goes through this the entire season just pitching five guys. You need guy number six, guy number seven, guy number eight, all the way, you know, 10, 11, 12, usually to get through a 6-month season. So, yeah, this is normal. And it, again, I would caution people from freaking out too much. No, if it's an extended stay for Max, then that's different. But, you know, early on, it's not, even if the Braves lose that game to the Cardinals, you know, if whoever they choose doesn't pitch that well, they lose the game. It's one game of 162, or, you know, if it ends up being two or three games, it's really not crushing yet. It's unfortunate, but there's a lot of talent on this team to cover up for Max, and there's a lot of games to be played after these that can, you know, that'll still decide the season. So it's really not as big a deal as some people are making it out to be. It's a big deal, but it's not that big a deal yet.
Yeah, and I think the only guy that I don't think is an option would be Soroka. And I saw a couple of those tweets today, but you know, I think he's got to get his rhythm, you know, and he's got to go down there and build innings. And you know, on the same note, you know, Ian Anderson may not be an option either if they're really intent on him on working on some things or whatnot, you know. So I'm kind of expecting it to be Elder, but I mean, you know, I wouldn't think they would do it. But I mean, Darius Vines is on the 40-man roster. I mean, once we get in the season, and you know, once you get Colby Allard back, and you know, if something like this happens, I mean, you're going to have a whole rotation at Gwinnett that just whoever's needed can probably come up and, you know, make an appearance and you know, fill some innings for you and everything. And that's a good thing to have. Obviously, you don't want Max to be the guy going down. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's game one of 162. I mean, Jacob DeGrom gave up five runs today. Aaron Nola got knocked around too. You know, it's a long season. You know, odds are by the midway, nobody's going to remember, you know, these first few starts and whatnot. And you know, in the big picture, it's not going to matter too much as long as it doesn't linger. And I mean, he walked off the field today and was talking after the game like, you know, he's probably thinking in his head that he might be able to make that next start. Obviously, they'll play it safe with him. So, you know, tough thing to come out of opening day with an injury. But again, I agree with you. You'd much rather it be a leg, you know, or something to that nature than the arm or the shoulder or anything that, you know, could be catastrophic.
Yeah, I'm not terribly concerned. He's had minor hamstring problems before. He's come back relatively quickly. You know, it might be one 15-day IL trip, but you know, over a 6-month season, that is kind of, you know, still relatively quickly. So yeah, it'll be something the Braves have to manage, but it's not the end of the world.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Just look, turning back to attention to the game, Braves beat the Nationals today 7-2, scored three runs pretty early, and then tacked on three more late in the game to kind of put it out of reach. It kind of felt in jeopardy a little bit through those bullpen innings late, but you know, it was a good game. I thought the lineup was interesting. I was pretty pleased, honestly, because the Braves stacked an extra right-hander into the lineup with Patrick Corbin starting. And with Travis d'Arnaud was at the DH, Marcell Ozuna played left field. You know, what did you think about the lineup pairing? Ozzy Albies hit cleanup. You know, he's had a lot of success against Corbin in the past. A lot of the Braves have, actually. But I was pretty surprised and pretty pleased with what the lineup looked like today.
Yeah, I was a little worried because of how much Ozuna saw kind of the top of the lineup late in spring, and I was thinking maybe Snit was trying to get cute with that. And so I was happy to see that the first four guys were, you know, Ronnie, Olson, Riley, and Albies. You know, Albies' four is always interesting because he crushes left-handers. Obviously, there was a lefty on the mound today, but, you know, he does struggle a lot more against righties. And so when Corbin leaves the game in the third inning, then you know, I think he pretty much saw nothing but righties after that. So, you know, it is kind of a give and take putting him there because he does come up a lot in big spots and usually batting left-handed where he's not quite as good as he is batting right-handed. So, you know, I understand why they do it with Corbin on the mound. It is kind of you do kind of pay for it on the back end, but, you know, that's going to be kind of how it is. I didn't really have any strong feelings about the lineup, which typically means that, you know, there was nothing really glaring. I'm not a fan of Ozuna being in left field. I think everyone knows that. I think we've probably beat that horse till it's probably been dead, you know, twice at this point. But I don't like Ozuna in left. I think he's a terrible defender. You know, he can't throw. He can't really run. You know, when you have a lefty on the mound, if you don't want to start Eddie, then, you know, start Pilar. Just put Pilar out there. That'll be fine. Like, he can hit left-handers, but he can play defense. So, you know, I get Ozuna's going to have to play, and he's going to DH a lot. But, you know, let's leave it at DH if we can. But I didn't really have any big problems with the lineup.
Travis d'Arnaud had four hits, including a huge double as when the Braves added on those insurance runs. He hit eighth. He was the DH. All the attention's kind of been on Sean Murphy, and obviously for good reason. And then the Braves roll out their two-catcher lineup on opening day, and d'Arnaud delivers as the DH. I thought that was, you know, I mean, Travis, not enough has been talked about Travis d'Arnaud. I mean, when you look back at this run, Travis d'Arnaud signing might be the most underrated move that Alex Anthopoulos has made. And then they re-upped him, you know, added him an extension to his contract. He's just meant so much to this team. You know, I just keep thinking about him coming back from that broken thumb and catching when he wasn't healthy. And, a couple of years ago, and just, you know, how huge and how big that was for the pitching staff down the stretch. And I just don't think enough people talk about how good a player Travis d'Arnaud is.
Yep, and I do think it helps him to hit when he doesn't have to catch, right? Like, catching is such a – and it's another thing we don't talk about enough, but how hard it is to be a full-time catcher and then still concentrate on offense because you do have so much on your plate on the defensive side. So I'm sure games like this where the catcher can DH and not have to worry about that are probably, you know, little mini vacations for these guys, and they can just concentrate on hitting, and it's probably a lot of fun, but yeah, d'Arnaud is definitely underrated. You know, I think even last year people probably don't really remember or understand how good of a year he had last year, even offensively. He was just really good last year. And, you know, Acuna was good. He had a couple of hits. Ronnie's going to steal a million bases this year. I mean, these rules are going to help Ronnie and Michael Harris and Ozzy and, you know, Sam Hilliard had a stolen base today. You know, they're just going to run wild. And I think that's going to be all over the league, but it's definitely going to help the Braves because the Braves obviously have quite a bit of speed in their lineup. So that was great to see. But yeah, offensively, it was a weird day. They got a lot of hits. They had a ton of base runners. I tweeted this out during the game, but they had like 15 base runners in the first five innings, which is, you know, anybody that can do math can figure out that's like three an inning. And they had scored four runs, which is probably the minimum you could score if you have that many base runners over that small amount of time. They just left a ton of guys on base. They really couldn't get a big hit. A couple of bleeders, a couple of walks helped them. Washington had some errors. I think we're going to talk about the defense here in a bit for both teams. But, yeah, it was a weird game. The Braves had a ton of opportunities. It felt like one of those that the Braves might pay for how many runners they left on base. And, you know, but then Travis came through in the, I think, the eighth. He's got a two-run double and then another error, and he scored. So another three runs, and that pretty much put it away.
Yeah, Acuna had two hits, like you said, and hit that opposite field single. That thing was hit hard. Drew a couple of throws over from Patrick Corbin, and you knew he was running, you know, after that. I mean, when you waste those two, you're going to have to throw him out. You know, he's going. And, man, he hit a seed in that eighth inning, too, that Victor Robles made an unbelievable catch on at the wall. You know, so
everything he hit today, I looked at his exit velocity numbers. He had like four balls over 100 miles an hour tonight. So,
yeah. Yeah. He looks like he's back, you know, and I think the home runs will come and everything. It was very cold there today. I mean, there wasn't a home run in the game. Matt Olson hit one off the top of the wall, and when that ball left the bat, I thought he hit that out. And
in a month, that's a home run,
right? And you know, he hit it off the top of the wall. Olson and Albies both had two hits. Olson had a couple of strikeouts early with runners on too, so it was good to see him come back and have a couple of good at bats. You know, Patrick Corbin can still be – he's not really effective anymore. He's been one of the worst pitchers in the league for a while. But he can still be tough on lefties at times. Threw a couple of nasty sliders to Olson there for strikeouts. You know, you was right. That eighth inning was huge because it felt – the bullpen was solid. Bullpen pitched well, but they gave up base runners. And a lot of them to lead off the innings. Five pitchers allowed four hits, four walks. Colin McHugh had the seventh inning, had a pitch clock violation while he was warming up. He didn't finish warming up in time. There was video of this. I mean, he missed it by like a second. So started the count 1-0, walked Jaime Candelario on three pitches basically, and then it looked like it shook him a little bit because he didn't really know what had happened. Walked the next guy and then worked out of that jam without allowing a run. I thought that was huge, but it did feel a little shaky there at times just because Washington had so many runners on base, and you know, one hit could have changed everything. But you know, kudos to the bullpen for coming in a whole lot earlier than anybody was expecting after Freed exited.
Yeah, on a cold day, you know, when it's 40-45 degrees outside and you have to get warm, you know, all of a sudden. And I thought Lucas Litke did a really, really good job given that situation, you know, trying to warm up on the mound with, you know, 35,000 people. It's freezing cold. You know, you weren't expecting to be in the game this soon. And, you know, he really did well. The whole bullpen did well. I mean, there were walks. You know, obviously Colin got into a little bit of trouble with the ball, the automatic ball that he got. But, you know, it was a really solid bullpen effort. I think the bullpen is going to be really good. It was good to see AJ. You know, AJ had a kind of a shaky start to his outing, and then he kind of flipped a switch and turned it back around. And, you know, Washington's not good. Like, we know that. You know, these are games they should win. But, you know, it was good to see. You know, Snit had to make a lot of pitching changes today. It seemed like he had a lot of mid-inning pitching changes. I think he had like three or four. By the way, we got to talk about this for a second. What in the hell are these jackets that these guys are wearing?
Yeah, those things were ugly. I mean, dude, I hope they were warm. I mean, that's the saving here at Grace. If I've got to wear that thing, you know, it better have kept me warm. I shouldn't have had, but Snicker was back out, back and forth to the mound so much today. He probably worked up a pretty good sweat. You know, that's one thing we've probably talked about this in the past, but you know, with the DH, you see a bunch more of mid inning changes because guys aren't getting pinch hit for. And, I thought they'd played that. I thought he played the righty lefty game pretty well today. I felt bad for Luis Garcia a little bit just because, you know, he had to face Litke, and then by the time he came back around again, he had to face Lee. And, you know, they just kept hammering him with left-handed pitching, you know, throughout the game.
Yeah, and we talked about that. That's the importance of having that third lefty you know, having Litke, having Dylan Lee, and having Minter is that you can really do that. You can frustrate guys, and you know, a lot of teams only have one or two lefties in their bullpen, and it does hamstring them later when you need to go get a, you know, a lefty out in a big spot. And the Braves don't have that. The Braves have plenty of left-handed help. So it was great to see, you know, the bullpen was a real plus today. And the offense, I mean, they scored 7 runs. So I don't want to pretend like they had a bad game. They just had a weird game.
Well, I mean, it almost feels good on one hand to see the Braves score 7 runs on a day that they had 2 extra base hits and didn't hit a home run. Neither of them was a home run. I mean, we know this team's going to hit home runs. I mean, they got off to a little bit of a slow start in the home run department last year, early in the season. Whether that was the weather, whether that was the baseball, we still aren't sure. But they ended up finishing 2nd in the majors, you know, and that's with Ronald giving you 15, you know. Yeah. And I thought that Washington certainly helped. CJ, we're going to talk about the defense here next, but, Washington helped a little bit with some errors. But still, you know, I think it was that speed, like we were talking about. Even if you're not stealing bases, it just puts pressure on the defense. And, they did a good job. They did a good job today, you know, as far as that went.
Yeah, and, you know, putting the ball in play, I'm not always a huge proponent of that. I think that gets oversaid. Because if you're sacrificing a lot of power just to put the ball in play, it can actually be more harm than good. Sometimes it's better to swing for the fence, and if you strike out, that's okay. And if you make contact, you're going to put it over the fence. But, you know, there are days when you don't have that. It's 45 degrees outside. The wind's blowing. You know, you're not going to hit the ball at the ballpark. You got to be able to score runs. And, you know, they're going to be able to manufacture runs more because they're running more. They do have lineup depth 1 through 9, so they're not ever going to have to be in a spot where, you know, they got a black hole coming to the plate to kill a rally. I mean, you know, they've just got talent, and that's the importance of depth, and that's the importance of speed, and, you know, the power will come, like you said. I'm not worried about home runs. But when they don't hit any home runs, they barely have any extra base hits at all. For them to put 7 on the board and leave that many guys on base doing it, you know, that just shows how much talent this offense, when it starts clicking really well, you know, this offense is going to be ridiculous, frankly.
Yeah, and I mean, they won too, and it wasn't the greatest defensive effort for them.
It was not.
No, I mean, they had 2 errors charged. One Riley made an unbelievable stop on a ball, and I want to talk a little bit about the positioning on that play here in a minute, but made a good stop. Should have ate it. You know, it was on a Dominic Smith grounder. I know Smith's not that fast, so Riley probably thought if he made a perfect throw, he could have, you know, he probably might have had a chance to get him. Ball skipped away and was wide, actually, and Smith ended up at 2nd. Michael Harris had a throwing error from the outfield. I don't think he was going to get the guy anyway. He got the error because the throw was wide and it allowed the runner on first to move up. But there was a couple of other plays. I mean, Matt Olson muffed one that and recovered and got the out at first. They might have had a double play. Made a nice catch going down the line over his shoulder later in the game. And then it had to be a terrible sky to play in, the high sun. I mean, it's 2 drop fly balls, very first hit of the game that Freed gave up. Ozzie was camped, looked like he was camped under it. Michael Harris right behind him, it fell in between them. Orlando Arcia dropped one on the infield. You know, you don't usually see that. You see outfielders lose it. Victor Robles made a nice recovery on a ball that I don't think he saw till it was almost on top of him, too. So just a weird day defensively. CJ Abrams had 3 errors for the Nationals, and I think most of them were throwing. 2 of them were throwing, 1 was fielding. So, you know, just not a good day defensively at all for either team, really. But, I think this Braves team they'll get all that stuff reeled in. But it made you, at times it was hard to watch. You kind of felt like you were watching, you know, way back at the beginning of spring training.
Yeah. You know, the fly ball stuff I'm not as worried about because if Victor Robles and Michael Harris are having a hard time catching balls in the outfield, just like normal pop-ups, then, I mean, those are literally maybe the 2 of the 3 or 5 best defensive center fielders in baseball. And so if those guys are having trouble, then it's just clearly brutal conditions, right? Like the sun is bad, the wind is bad, the sky, you know, it's a weird sky, you know, all the conditions I think were there today for fly ball. And we just saw routine fly balls, like be adventures today. And so I'm not as worried about that stuff. The stuff that I don't love is, you know, booting. It seemed like for both teams, every ground ball, like nothing was caught clean. Like everything was like off a glove and then you got to run and get it and throw the guy out. You know, it was just a lot of sloppiness on ground balls today. I thought Riley had one that, you know, he was up against the line and it was a ball down the line that, you know, you really should stop. And he didn't stop it and it went for a double and that ended up being the first run that Max gave up. You know, stuff like that that worries me a little more just because it does deal with the individual talent of your defenders. You know, Olsen had one that he got the out, but like you said, it should have been a double play. And I think that ended up leading to the second run that they gave up. The next guy came up and hit an RBI single with two out. And obviously if Matt had turned that double play, it wouldn't have happened. So that stuff at the corners, you know, on ground balls with range and stuff that we worried about last year and kind of they weren't great at last year. That stuff I am worried about. I do think it can be a weakness if it's not shored up, but you know, it didn't cost them today. Obviously it's typically not when you score seven runs, a couple of errors usually aren't going to kill you too bad, but yeah, you know, it's the first game. So hopefully they clean it up, but yeah, the range stuff on the corners is definitely something I'm watching going forward. Cause I do think it can be a problem if they don't clean it up a little bit.
Yeah. One thing I wanted to point out too is, and we've talked about it a little bit, was, you know, that play that Riley made that he had the throwing error on, you know, he was pretty much in the shortstop position because Smith's a left-handed hitter. Arcia was played way up the middle. And I heard the broadcast finally noticed, you know, that, and finally acknowledged it and talking about, you know, hey, the shift's gone, but you can still position your guys. You know, I saw two or three times today where, you know, ball was hit, not in the Braves game, but I think Tampa Bay game, it showed one that was hit hard back up the middle and there the second baseman was standing. You know, all he had to do was take one step and field it and throw the guy out. You know, what we have eliminated, though, is moving your third baseman over to right field. And I think teams are, you know, I think you'll still see a lot of positioning. I mean, it's clear that's still going to take place. It won't be as severe as it was, but you know, the idea that, you know, third baseman and shortstop are just going to play in their normal spots for a whole nine innings. That was never going to be the case. And, you know, I think today was another example of that.
You know, it's funny. That's been one of the hardest adjustments for me watching games is that like for the first 25 years of my life, like a ball hit hard up the middle was always a hit, right? Like it was just always a hit. If you hit a ball hard up the middle and the pitcher didn't get it, then it was a single. And then for the last like 8 years, 7 years or whatever, that's not the case. Like if you hit a ball hard up the middle, it's almost always an out now. I mean, you always almost always have a defender up the middle now. And I'm still not used to it. You know, when I see a hard ball up the middle, I'm like, oh, a single. And then they, you know, flip the camera around to the fielding angle. And there's a guy literally standing right there. You're like, man, what the hell? Like, why is he not in where he's supposed to be? Like, why is he not where he's, you know, been for forever? But yeah, you're still going to see it. I mean, you're always going to have guys standing kind of up the middle.
That's the thing about the shift too, is just like, you know, you notice when that guy gets jammed and he's strong enough and he hit, you know, he fists one and the third baseman's not there, you know, and it goes for a hit. But you don't notice the ones too much is those rockets back up the middle, you know, that the second baseman, I mean, the shift gives and it takes away, you know, but I mean, the thought that it's just completely gone, you know, that's not true, you know, because we saw positioning happening in the spring and I saw it again today. And I imagine these teams are going to start pushing the envelope, you know, and it's good. The pressure's going to be on these umpires. And I think they've done a pretty good job. I haven't seen a shift violation yet in any of the games I've watched. But, you know, there's not a whole lot of difference if you're standing one step to the left of second base or if you're standing behind the bag at second base, not for an athletic defender. So, you know, it's going to be interesting, something to watch. But, you know, I've really enjoyed the pitch clock, and I thought today, other than the McHugh deal, you know, between innings, you know, I didn't really notice it. I didn't really notice it all day. I noticed a little bit with Minter. Minter didn't look comfortable on that first at bat, and I think Murphy saved him from getting a violation before you even throw a first pitch. You know, he was kind of slow there, and he didn't look settled in. But after that, after the guy got on base, he's got those five extra seconds, and he looked more like what we were expecting to see out of him.
Yeah, and we talked about it. Like Minter was one of the slowest workers last year. You know, the second slowest on the team last year behind Jansen, and obviously Jansen's one of the slowest guys in the league. So it was always gonna be an adjustment for AJ, but he did look like he got more comfortable. It's funny, you know, you get a guy on base and it's usually something that's not comfortable, but when you got a 5-run lead, you know, and you get a guy on base and now you get an extra 5 seconds to throw, it's like, well, maybe this isn't the worst thing in the world. So, but yeah, he did look much more comfortable. I didn't notice it. I like the way the broadcast did it. They implemented the clock and the score bug in a way that, you know, was seamless. It didn't stick out like it did in spring training. You didn't really notice it. And I, everybody that's watched minor league baseball says, you know, after a few weeks, you don't even talk about it anymore. It's just part of the game. And, you know, this game was still like a 3-hour and 15-minute game, but that was because, you know, there's no pitch clock in the world that can beat Patrick Corbin having a bad game. And, you know, the Braves had the first three innings of the game that were like 20 minutes each. So, and that's just Patrick Corbin being Patrick Corbin. But I think it will cut down on game times a ton. I mean, everybody said it does. So it'll be fun. And I loved it. You know, if you don't notice it, then it's probably doing its job. It's a lot like umpiring.
Yeah, with all those mid-inning pitching changes too. I mean, today's game could have very easily been pushing 4 hours without the clock.
Yeah.
And as many base runners that were on, you know, for both teams.
Max got hurt in the middle.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I think it, to me, it didn't feel long. It kept a good pace, even though there was a lot going on. So, you know, yeah. I'm a convertee on the pitch clock. I really like it now. And, you know, like I said, I've enjoyed watching it, and I'd be interested to see if we see how it affects pitchers. Like if guys like Minter pitch better because they, you know, with a man on than they do with the bases empty, just because they got a little extra time, you know, and I'm sure that's something that we're going to be able to track, you know, once we get enough of these games under our belt. So, you know, it'll be another data point, and it'll be interesting to talk about.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, before today even got started, I mean, we didn't even have the opening day roster or a lineup or anything. Braves inked Orlando Arcia to a contract extension, or I don't even think it was called an extension. It was called a new contract, and we'll talk a little bit about that. But this one leaked out. This one was different. The Braves didn't announce this one, and I thought it was funny because they had Alex Anthopoulos on the broadcast today, and he said he had it done yesterday. This would have been Wednesday evening, but it was an off day, and he didn't think it would leak out, and then it did. And I mean, the Braves just threw it in the I thought this was hilarious, because normally you know they do a tweet that's got the full press release in it, and because it leaked out today, they just threw it in the roster moves tweet when they announced opening day roster. So but basically Arcia got a 3-year, $7.3 million total guaranteed. It's a 3-year deal with a club option for 2026 that has a $1 million buyout on it too. So that's how you come up with the $7.3 million. I think the only real difference that I saw in this, he was originally slated to make $1.3 million this year. So this contract now will give him an extra million this year, which I guess is deserved since he's the opening day of shortstop now. You know, I mean, I saw a lot of takes about this contract. Now, maybe I egged it on a little bit in my first tweet about it today, too. But, you know, I mean, it's a good deal for a guy that, you know, they obviously value, that could start a shortstop or he could slide back into a utility role. And, you know, he seems to fit in on the roster real well. But what'd you think when you saw this, the news that Arcia had an extension?
Well, my first thought, literally very first thing that came to my head was, I don't know if I've ever seen a 3-year, $7 million extension before. I've never seen like the years almost be, you know, half as big a number as the dollars. So it was weird. It's a weird number, you know. It's also a weird situation. Orlando's a starting shortstop now, and this is very, very much like bench money, like utility player money. I mean, he's making, the most he's making is this year, and it's $2.3 million this year, and that's the highest his salary gets in any of these 3 years. So, you know, even if he doesn't work out as the starting shortstop, you can throw him on the bench. He's not making so much money that you can't do that. I mean, $7 million over 3 years is just nothing. It's, I mean, you could spend more than that going year to year, just even if he's not very good and just want a bench player, you could spend more than that. So it's no brainer for the Braves. I mean, there's no downside here when it's that little money. If he sucks, if he, you know, if he's just, if he nosedives and you can cut him and you're, you know, you're really not losing much. You're losing $2 million a year in terms of your payroll. So it's a no brainer. I'm a little surprised Orlando signed it, to be honest with you, given he won the starting job. You know, I get he gets a little bump, and the Braves did have an option on him for next year. But, you know, I thought if he went out and had a really good year and, you know, showed that he could be a starting shortstop again and hit, and he's hit really well the last few months with in a Braves uniform, then, you know, he could kind of go make a pretty decent contract somewhere if he's, you know, if he plays well. And I can't remember who tweeted out. I wish I could, because I'd give him credit. But somebody was like, this is the exact opposite of like betting on yourself, right? Like whatever the opposite of betting on yourself is, this is it. Because, you know, he basically said, I'm fine signing utility money for the next 3 years. You know, $7 million guaranteed is better than nothing. And, you know, it was funny because you always hear about these guys who are like, no, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to, you know, I'm going to win this starting job and I'm going to have a great year and then I'll go sign a big deal. And he was like, nope, I'm taking the guaranteed money now. And, you know, if I end up being underpaid, then so be it. But, you know, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. But it was fun. So that was my reaction. It was just funny. It's a funny deal. It's a weird deal. It's not something you see a lot. It's a weird situation with, you know, re-signing your starting shortstop to bench money, to, you know, really kind of low bench money. I mean, bench players make $4 or $5 million a year now. So it's even on kind of the low end for bench players. So it was weird. It's a no brainer for the Braves. He's been a really good player. And yeah, I think I'm more surprised he signed it than I am that they signed it.
Well, I tried to get my head around it a little bit too, from that perspective, but I guess the thinking, you know, I may be wrong, but I would think, all right, if he plays well, if he, you know, he takes this shortstop job, then the Braves are obviously picking up that option, you know, next year. So he's not going to cash in. You know, if he doesn't play well, then the Braves are not picking up that option, and he's probably going to spring training trying to win a job, you know, and that's the one thing that he avoids by taking this, you know, the next 2 years, he knows he's coming to camp pretty much with a roster spot. I mean, it's like you said, it's not a guarantee. You could walk away from, you know, and pay a guy, cut a guy and pay him the $2 million. It's not going to be that big deal. But I think there's a level of security in that for a guy like Arcia. I mean, example, you look at Adrianza, you know, I mean, last three seasons now, he's had to go and try to earn his way onto an opening day roster. And this at least, you know, protects Arcia from that. You know, maybe he wouldn't have had to do that. Maybe somebody would have pwned up. But, you know, I think if he struggles this year, then it's a, you know, it would be a real question mark whether that would happen. I think it also speaks. I think he likes being there, and I think he fits in well. And I mean, Brian Snicker, you know, just glows about him any chance he gets. If you ever asked him about Orlando Arcia, he's got nothing but good things to say. He talks about how hard he works, how good of a teammate he is. And we all know how much the Braves value that. That's what I'm trying to say. So, you know, it was surprising. It was surprising for two reasons. Like I said, number one, the Braves didn't announce it, and number two, it wasn't something that I really had in my head, because I knew they had that club option on him for next season.
Yeah, and the only other thing I'll say about it is Alex was asked about it during the game. He was on with the TV guys, and you know, he used the term plus defense when he was talking about Arcia, And we've talked to a lot about shortstop defense this offseason for obvious reasons. And, you know, there's some debate on how good Arcia really is, you know, at shortstop. And, you know, from the team's point of view, which is the only point of view that matters, by the way, they view Arcia as a plus defender at short. And, you know, he did make some good plays today. He had that one bad play with the pop-up. But, again, it was a really tough sky today, so I don't really blame that on him. But, you know, he had a couple of good plays. He has a really strong arm. He made some incredible plays at the end of spring training. You know, it was funny. Like, as soon as they announced that Grissom and Shoemaker would be an option, like, Arcia turned into, like, prime, you know, A-Rod. Like, he started hitting everything. He started catching everything. It's almost like a confidence boost. So the team very clearly – and you and I talked about this before, the team very clearly thinks highly of Orlando Arcia. Whether you do or not, anybody at home does, you know, it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what any of our opinions are. They, from their own mouths, very, very clearly, and, you know, through their actions, they made him the starting shortstop. They are very high on him. And they think he can be a much better player than he was when he was the starting shortstop with Milwaukee. They think the bat has come a long way. You know, he had a good day today. He had a couple hits. I know he had one hit. I think he had a walk. He had the first RBI of the game, you know. So good for him. I'm happy for him. He seems like a cool dude. He seems like a great teammate. He's got some money in his pocket now. He's got some guaranteed money that he can kind of, you know, he's got some, it's not a ton of guaranteed money, but it's enough for some security. You know, you can make $7 million work for you if you do it right. So, good for him. It's been a strange saga, this whole shortstop thing, but, you know, as long as the Braves have a good shortstop, then honestly, I don't really care any, you know, about the rest. So, good for him.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out, and I'm anxious to see, once we've got enough data, you know, what the defensive metrics really say about him, you know, because he hasn't played shortstop in a while. And, I mean, there were a lot of years there where he was a really good defensive shortstop, and then he had other years where, you know, he wasn't that great. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he lands, you know, on the many different metrics that we got. So, well, I think that's going to wrap us up this week. Unless you got anything else you want to talk about.
No, I need more information about these jackets. I'm going to go Google some stuff. I heard that some other teams were wearing them too. So maybe this is like a Nike thing that they were forcing all the, like, I need answers.
Yeah. I want to know if they're going to be in
Brian Snicker,
if they're going to be in the clubhouse, you know, store. I mean, I don't know. That was the most,
as what, as jackets or as like bedspreads,
dress,
like,
or, I mean, those, that's the most Twitter reaction I've seen about a jacket. I think ever.
He was wearing, I mean, he was walking around, he was wearing the tarp. It looked like he was wearing the tarp. I just need answers. If anybody has answers to this question, hit me up on Twitter. I need to know what this, I need to know what these are. And if they're permanent, then I need to know. So anybody, any information, please just reach out.
Yeah, I think they'll be dropping those things as quick as they can. It'll be interesting to see when they go back to a cold, after they come home and it's warm and everything, and they go back to a cold city. It'd be interesting if those things continue to show up.
Yeah, those are amazing. Amazing.
All right, well, the marathon started. You know, we're going to be regular season's here. It's going to be a long stretch. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of ups and downs along the way. But, you know, but we'll have you every step of the way on the site and, you know, in the podcast, your podcast feed as well. So, you know, if you're not subscribed, be sure and do that. And we'll see you guys again next week.